Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hi everybody, this is the Cricket Badger podcast.
Each badger marks the track with its own scent.
His black legs are short but very powerful for digging. The name badger probably comes from the French word bêcher, meaning digger.
And welcome along, cricket badgers around the world. It's good to have you with us again. Cricket Badger Podcast is sponsored by Manscaped.com for the best in male grooming. Quote Badger with your order and get 20% off and free shipping. I am James, as always. It's episode number about 537 of the Cricket Badger Podcast. And we finally got round to one of my favourite cricketers to watch, certainly on the county scene. He played for the wrong county. He was Lancashire, and I'm a Yorkshire supporter. But anyway, that's another story. We can get into that further down the line. But Stuart Law, welcome along to the Cricket Badger Podcast. Good to see you.
Hey, James. Thanks for the invitation, mate. Look forward to it.
Right. I've told you, we've got 20 questions I always ask people. Some are a bit more serious than the others. And we'll start off with question number one, which I always think is a good place to start. Why cricket? What is it about cricket that has dragged you in, kept you for the majority of your life and kept you involved with the sport?
Well, to be honest, I was born with a cricket bat in my hand. My family, my grandfather was a good cricket player, you know, representative of, you know, Queensland country teams, etc. My father was a good cricketer, same thing, represented Queensland country. My uncles both played. So the probably the toughest games of cricket I played were the backyard test matches around Christmas time. You know, and the further I went along in my career, the more dangerous it got. But I was born with a cricket bat in my hand. My family, you know, we're sport mad. Cricket got me in early, and I've been involved for 35 years in the professional game. So it's given me a lot. I'm just trying to give back now to the young kids coming through.
It's quite an unpleasant birth for your mother if you've got a cricket bat coming out with you. we won't focus on that bit.
It was only a miniature bat, so it wasn't too bad.
I mean, just on the kind of giving back thing, I mean, you obviously moved into coaching since you finished playing, and we'll talk a bit about the coaching. But you're out there in the UAE at the moment with the Bangladesh under-19s, aren't you? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I've been the head coach of the under-19 program in Bangladesh now since July last year, and it's a tough gig, mainly because the young boys during COVID, that the whole of their cricket was shut down. So they've got a World Cup coming up in January 24, so only a couple, 8 months away, 9 months away, and to lose 2 years of cricket has been pretty tough for them to sort of regather where their skill level should be. But the joy on their face when they actually do play cricket, you know, it's something that you can't explain properly. But it's been a great challenge. There's a couple of real good potential future superstars in this group, and you know they are sponges at this age too. It's been a great great experience for me and the coaches that have been involved, just to listen to the players and watch the players develop and get better. It's been brilliant. So yeah, I'm thoroughly enjoying what I'm doing right now.
Spoken to a few coaches on this podcast, and obviously you achieved a lot playing wise, but how different, how satisfying, what's the different kind of dynamic in seeing somebody you've kind of invested some of your time in actually go out there and score 100 or take a five for?
Yeah, oh mate, towards the back end of my playing career, when you're a senior player and you're helping players out in the middle, you might be batting with them during a partnership and they're going through a tough period, and you try and help them, you talk them through the next, you know, 5 to 10 overs that you're out there, and to see them come through that and to go on and make a big score was probably more satisfying than scoring the runs yourself. And coaching, I see, is very similar to that. There are times when you've got to follow what, you know, cricket boards and what have you want you to do, and they want you to come in and do a specific, you know, type of coaching method, or you know, they want you to show some tough love or what have you. So you've got to follow direction, but also, you know, with that, you've got to help the guys as much as possible. And you know, if they come out and they start scoring runs, well, you know what, that's probably, as I said, that's probably better than scoring the runs yourself at times.
I'd imagine it's 50-50. And half the time you're pulling your hair out thinking, why haven't you listened to me? And the other half you're thinking, wow, fantastic.
Well, having been there, I probably put my coaches through, you know, that sort of mindset as well. You know, what the hell are you doing? We didn't tell you to do that. But when you get out in the middle, you know, the pressure, I keep saying, you know, pressure does strange things to people. And, you know, if you come out the other top, you work it out yourself during that period of time, you become successful. It's certainly very rewarding.
You've obviously coached West Indies, you've coached Middlesex, you've coached kind of almost like the finished product, and now you're coaching the under-19s, which are coming through. I guess there's a difference there, but I mean, I've spoken to coaches who say a lot of it is just off the pitch. You kind of sit down, have a chat with people and just kind of create the mindset. Because a lot of it's played in the head, isn't it?
You know, the big difference is, you know, out here I said you've almost got to coach the coaches into how to think about, you know, different scenarios at practice. Practice is really, really important. You know, the young players, they don't know. And these young kids, they really need guidance. They need you to be their, you know, their father, their big brother, their mother at times. So to encapsulate all that is probably the most difficult part. Watching them get out and play the game is probably the most enjoyable side of this job. But as you said before, you know, the mental side of things is where they can sort of come undone. And being really emotional people, the Bangladesh or anyone from the subcontinent, their emotions run really high. So they're either really up or really down. Mm. There's no in between. So when things are going well, everyone's up. And when things start not going so well, they don't just go a little bit down, they go all the way down. So when they do get into trouble, it can escalate out of control. So to try and keep them at a level playing field and level mentally during a match, during pressure situations, is where you'll get the most out of them. If you can achieve that, or if we can achieve that, there's some high talent. Just the talent can come through and they can showcase their skills. So that's the real challenge.
If not a cricketer, Stuart Law, what would you have been doing with your life? Where would life have taken you?
Oh, mate, who knows? I didn't like school. I wasn't very good at school. You know, that's probably not what parents want to hear me talking, you know, if I'm coaching their kids. But I had a go at rugby league when I was a young man, but I realised that was probably just a bridge too far for me. I didn't like the bigger fellas running at you. The contact was too tough. I probably would have been, you know, something like a, I do joke about it. When I was younger, probably would have been a garbage truck driver. That's probably where I probably saw myself. That was the level of education that I provided myself, chasing my dream to play cricket. But I think if I hadn't played cricket, I think there would have been something else. So, you know, I was surrounded by good people, you know, good role models. My father worked, you know, his backside off from, you know, years that I can remember. So I think I might have gone into something like a, you know, a financial planner or, you know, insurance or something like that, go along the lines, because my grandparents were in banking. My father was in insurance. My uncle, I probably wouldn't have gone down that road. He was a one was a music producer, and one was a used car salesman. So I had a myriad of different opportunities. Probably if I didn't play cricket.
You mentioned a lot of people there. Who was the biggest influence on you as a young player? Who brought you through? Who gave you that guidance, that mentorship?
My father was my best coach. I remember in the backyard, I had a ball and a sock hanging from the big tree, the gum tree out in the backyard. And I used to go out there for hours and hours and annoy the living daylights out of the neighbours. They didn't like us too much. And I just remember my father coming out. I was about 6 or 7, and I was just hitting the ball. And he goes, right, if you want to do this, you're going to have to do it properly. And he just showed me the basics of it. And from there, I learned every now and then he'd come out and have a look. He'd take me down the nets, and we'd work on a few things. And then once, I progressed through to playing A-grade cricket, he was always there to offer me advice. Some I liked, some I didn't. The critique was very brutally honest, but I think that's what made me the player I was. To be told that 45 was well played, but not good enough. If you want to go further, you got to score more than that. And if you get out for 30, did you get tired? Did you? Yeah, okay, yeah, fair enough. And just wound me up, and I thought, right, I'll show you. And lo and behold, it worked for me. But my father, definitely.
Badgers are furry creatures. 85% of women badgers think bad grooming is a major turn-off. 80% of women badgers think men should trim below the belt. 89% of men think good grooming is essential to their professional success. Don't just dismiss it out of hand. Get on there, manscaped.com. Check out their great range of male grooming accessories. Hygiene, appearance, attractiveness, confidence. Simply go to manscaped.com, quote the discount code BADGER. You get 20% off, you get free shipping, and you get some seriously quality equipment. Manscaped.com. Together, we save balls. If I could take you back and you could relive any 24 hours in your cricketing life and have that day again with the highs, a good day in your career, which one would you want to relive?
Oh, man. Too many to probably narrow it down to one that springs to mind immediately, but probably the 96 World Cup final, played against Sri Lanka. Sri Lanka beat us. Maybe, if we had of had a bit more, reconnaissance about the ground and the conditions that we were going to face. Maybe, I could have been sitting here as a World Cup winner. That would have been nice. But to be honest, I'm pretty happy, pretty stoked with some of the days that I had. That last day of the Lancashire chasing down 480 to win the championship against Surrey on the last day, and we finished 24 short. Got out to a shot I don't normally play, which, once again, pressure does funny things to people. Doesn't matter who you are or, how experienced you are, you still, face that pressure. Maybe that would have been good to sit there and, to chase down a total is great to win a trophy, but 484, there's a reason why you don't chase down 484 every day of the week. It's almost impossible, but we nearly got there. That would have been fantastic, and to win a championship would have been great.
I hadn't realised until I looked at your stats. I mean, your stats stand next to most people's, don't they? You're averaging over 50 in first-class cricket, et cetera, et cetera. 27,000 first-class runs is just a ridiculous number of runs. But just the one test match there, Stuart, obviously you're in that period where it was an incredible Australian side, but you played one test match, got 54 not out, and never played again. That's quite bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah, and thanks for bringing it up again. I almost got over it, I remember after that test match, Trevor Hones, who was Queenslander and one of my good mates, I was a chairman of selectors, and I just spoke to him and said, okay, I was in the team for Steve Waugh. Steve Waugh was injured. I was then, replaced by Steve Waugh, and I thought, fair enough. And I was told that David Boone was retiring at the end of that series. And, Trevor Hones said, well, Ricky Ponting's going to be the number three. you know, there will be a space available, and so you just keep doing what you're doing, and we'll give you a nudge when the time comes. I'm still waiting for that nudge. You know, every time, you know, I'd ring him. Eventually, he got sick of me. Give him a call. He'd go. He did. He answered the phone with, "Right, what do you want now?" You know, and I said, "Well, mate, this is what you said, and this is what's actually happened. I'm a bit confused. You know, what's going on? You pick someone from obscurity. I've been here in and amongst the setup. One test, one innings, 54 not out. Why not? Why not me?" And he goes, decision we made. I'm sorry. So, okay, sirrah, sirrah."
Quite a few very good players in that period that, you know, Darren Lehman had to wait a long, long time to get into the side, didn't he? And a lot of people who, you know, ripped up county cricket who were Australian,
yeah,
hardly touched the Australian national team and were very, very good players. It was a frustrating time for many, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And Darren, you mentioned Darren Lehman. He played for Australia when he was 18, 19. So, you know, he came in, you know, went away back to Sheffield Shield cricket, then finally found his way over to county cricket, scored a mountain of runs before he went back into the Australian side. Matthew Hayden was the same. You know, Matthew Hayden played a period of test matches out of the team for a good period of time, then back in, and, you know, the rest is history. So I just wish I had that, you know, resurgence or rebirth, you know, 2 or 3 years later, which may have given me, you know, more of an idea of if I could have handled test match cricket. But, you know, to knock out guys, people say to me, you know, it must be disappointing. I went, to knock out, I wasn't just knocking out players. I was knocking out legends of Australian cricket when it boils down to it. And I can always say that I did play with those guys in a test match. I played 50-odd one day in the Nationals with the same players. You know, so I can say I've been there. Yeah, I would have loved to have nailed a few more, but it wasn't to be.
Illustrious county career in England, Essex and Lancashire, coach of Middlesex as well. I mean, we've a lot of talk about the state of county cricket. Is it strong enough? Yeah. Every time we get beaten by the Australians, county cricket's at fault. Every time we win, it's the state of the international team rather than the benefit of county cricket. How did you see the strength of county cricket? Did you enjoy your time? I mean, you must have done because you kept coming back, but did you enjoy county cricket?
Oh mate, I absolutely love county cricket, mainly because it's everyone's dream to come to England to play cricket, whether it be league cricket, whether it be county cricket, international Ashes tour. As a young Australian growing up, that's what you wanted to do. So every time I came, you know, when I first arrived at Essex, Alan Border was good friends with Graham Gooch, and Border, you know, recommended me to Graham Gooch, as did Mark Waugh. And I do remember the last game of the Queensland season, Alan Border floating around. He goes, "You're going to Essex, aren't you?" I went, "Yes, yes, I am." He said, "Right, I've recommended you. Don't you dare let me down." Okay, so I had that ringing in my ears every time I went out. And because every season went past and I wasn't playing for Australia, I was getting frustrated. And I thought, right, the only thing I can do now is every time I play county cricket, because when I came in 96, you were still playing against some of the world-class, you know, bowlers from around the world. And the England boys were playing, Darren Goff, Andy Caddick, you know, the two top bowlers in England, they were playing county cricket. So every county game became my test match. You know, and I'd just go out there and just try and put runs up against, you know, the sides that I was playing against. It didn't matter who it was. Just try to put runs on the board and just to prove myself that I can do it day in, day out, which is what county cricket's all about. You've got to learn to play tired because, you know, it was relentless. And to do that, you know, made me realise that, okay, I'm probably good enough to play international cricket when you're playing against the likes of, you know, Alan Donald, you know, Curtly Ambrose, Courtney Walsh, Darren Goff, Andy Caddick, etc. So, you know, I absolutely loved it, and I still love it today. I disagree with a lot of people saying that Sheffield Shield cricket is the strongest competition in the world. I disagree with that. I don't think it's any stronger than what county cricket is, and county cricket's probably not any stronger than Sheffield Shield cricket is right here, right now. I think they've both got their pros and cons. County cricket for me was an opportunity to play at a quintessential county ground. Worcester is one of the most picturesque, beautiful grounds I played at, and to play at the international stadiums was something something that I cherished.
You mentioned the relentless nature of county cricket. There was talk about a reduction in the number of games to be played in the championship. I can remember talking to Jason Gillespie, and he said the difference, he loved county cricket as well, but he said the difference is that you are going from one ground to another, to another, to another in the county game. Whereas in the Sheffield Shield, you might get a little bit more time to prepare for the next opposition and actually think about your game. And if you're struggling to put a few things right, is that, can you see that? Which is easier as a player? I mean, you're churning out runs left, right, and centre probably, so you hardly ever were out of form, were you? But did you find it hard to do it day in, day out?
Well, I found it hard. It wasn't easy, believe me, but it's what I chose to do, so I had to make it work for me. Dizzy's right in what he says, and we've always said this, that county cricket, the difference between county cricket and Sheffield Shield cricket, after a Shield match, you've probably got a week and a half to prepare for the next game. Whereas in county cricket, when I played first played, I remember we played 9 days in 10, and that was, two or three venue changes in that time as well. So, you didn't have that time. If you got into it's easy. You play a lot of cricket. It's easy to get into bad habits. And if you're getting the bad habits and your form starts sliding, well, then you don't have time in county cricket, the relentless nature of it. You didn't have time to go back to the nets to work a few things out, talk to someone. You had to do it on the fly. And I think that teaches a lot about, self-coaching as well. I think a lot of people nowadays are too reliant on a coach to tell them what to do. If you don't have that out in the middle, you don't have that luxury. If you're batting, you can't have your coach standing just behind you saying, go forward to the half volley and go back to the short ball and all the rest of it. And, you've got to work it out yourself. And that taught me how to do that. And I knew cues that if I was hitting the ball in a certain area, what I was doing wrong. And, gave me a trigger in my mind to say, okay, I've got to concentrate on X, Y, Z now. And, usually it mightn't happen overnight, but it might take a week or 2 weeks to get back into your groove. And the test of a quality player is when you're feeling out of form, you're still scoring runs. Because it's not about how you look, it's about how many you score. And I think young kids forget about that these days. They just want to look great, hit beautiful, beautiful cover drives. It's pretty difficult in April and May against the Duke ball in England to hit a pretty cover drive. You've got to be ugly.
You are listening to the Cricket Badger Podcast.
The Cricket Badger Podcast is fueled by coffee. Take a look at cricketcoffeeco.com for some excellent speciality coffee for cricket badgers. Expertly roasted and ethically sourced, the coffee is fantastic. cricketcoffeeco.com. Quote Badger with your order and you'll get 10% off. Was there a poster boy on the young Stuart Law's wall? Who was the hero of yours when you were a kid? Was there anybody you looked up to?
Yeah, there was, mate. I was lucky enough. I had mentors. My father introduced me to Greg Chappell as a young man. So I remember sitting in his office as a 14, 15-year-old and just, talking about batting with Greg Chappell. I moulded myself around three players. I love Martin Crowe from New Zealand. What a beautiful technician, but also he was big in stature. I stood next to him once and my God, he's a big man, but he also carried New Zealand on his shoulders. But the way he did it, the class he had, technique wise, the power and the determination, he was one. So Greg Chappell, Martin Crowe, and the great Sir Ivan Isaac Vivian Alexander Richards. I wish I had his brutal power and, sheer confidence, when he walked out to bat. Those three guys, I sort of wanted to play a little bit like them. In different situations, you needed to be all three of them. But if I could be one of them, it would have been Sir Viv.
Sir Viv was my hero as well when I was younger. Mm. He just had everything, didn't he? He had like muscles on his muscles in swagger and everything. Oh, just incredible. Fantastic.
Confidence. Nice to watch.
Yeah. I've seen a few things where he said, it was a bit of an act, all that swagger. Basically, the confidence wasn't quite as much as he portrayed, but he wanted to actually impose that on the opposition.
Well, the opposition felt it, even if he didn't feel great. Opposition, you saw him walking out, the chewing the gum, the tapping the bat handle with his glove and, the head back and the cap just sitting on the top of his head. And, it was one of those things. If he got going, we saw a lot of him in Australia against, some high-quality fast bowling, and to walk out at you know, the Wacker with, you know, just to cap on and take on Lilly and Thompson and, yeah, you know, not just take them on but destroy them. It was great to watch as a kid. You know, when he came in, we were out in the backyard or out in the out playing whatever we were doing, riding bikes and whatever. When he came in to bat, everyone just disappeared and they went and watched him. So you didn't want to miss it.
Yeah, fantastic player. If I could let you, this is a question about a current player, but if I could let you jump into the body of a current player, have their life for 24 hours, have their skills and their challenges and their successes, who would you pick?
Virat Kohli. What he's had to go through, I know Sachin Tendulkar before him had it as well. You had, you know, people on your shoulders, and most people don't quite understand when you go to India, if you play cricket, you've got, you know, nearly 2 billion people wanting you to, you know, drag India over the line. And to bat with that sort of pressure and the way he goes about it, his record is phenomenal. The way he captains, you know, sometimes he goes overboard, sometimes he goes over the top, but I think he is so emotional. Yeah. He involves the crowd and whatever, the way he does it. And off field, he's a tremendous role model. So, Virat Kohli for me.
West Indies, being the head coach there, how was that? Because we talked about Viv Richards and obviously that great team that he was part of, and Clive Lloyd before him, one of your predecessors at Lancashire. But obviously West Indies going through a slightly tougher time at the moment. Was that a challenge, the taking on the West Indies job?
Yeah, it was. But it was probably the best 2 years of coaching I've ever been involved in.
It's not a bad place to live for a start, is it?
It's not bad, but you don't spend too much time on the beach. You know, you're always at work, unfortunately. But the young test team that we had, I remember coming to England, you know, and Geoffrey Boycott, you know, quite happily saying it's the worst ever West Indies team that's ever come to the shores. And we got beaten in a day-night test match at Edgbaston. We were copping it left, right and centre. And then we came out and beat England at Headingley with Shea Hope scoring 200s in each innings. So to be a part of that group, the misconception of the West Indies is they don't want to play test cricket. They don't really care. They just want to play T20. They're just chasing the money. And that's so wrong. It's not funny. You know, you sit in that dressing room, everyone wants to play test cricket that's in that test squad. There's a few others, you know, the superstars, the Andre Russells and Chris Gales at the time, they'd finished with their test side. So that's test side, that's fine. But that's only a small, you know, sample size of what the West Indies are about. And, you know, even a guy like Shimron Hetmyer, who now is out of the West Indies test side, he always had ambition to play test cricket. He wanted to be the highest run scorer in test. Desperately wanted to play test cricket. Other things have curtailed that for him. But the biggest challenge with the West Indies was managing the ultimate egos from the T20 side. And, you know, deep down, they're all really, really good people.
Shimron Hetmyer and the challenges of the T20 thing. I mean, you could basically feel the West Indies team of the people that have kind of fragmented away, couldn't you, and gone down the T20 franchise route?
Yeah, true. You know, but the cricket in the region means so much to the people as well. So, you know, they still have the glory years in their forefront of their mind. You know, the 17 years of domination of world cricket, what a fantastic cricket team they were. And, you know, it's far from that at the moment, but there's other reasons for it, you know, and you get down into the nitty gritty and, you know, it's not a case. It might not be the only thing that's holding them back, but the funds that the ICC issue out to all the countries, you know, the big three in India, England and Australia get the most. And then to try and run a first-class system, you know, tournaments in the West Indies, it's slightly different everywhere else because everywhere's a flight. It's similar to Australia and South Africa and places, but everywhere's a flight, but it's an international flight. So the international flight tickets are a bit more than domestic. They don't have a low-cost airline because they don't need to. One services all the islands and they basically charge what they want, hotel fees and what have you. And to put together the Leeward Islands, it's just a group of players from, you know, 3 to 4 to 5 to 6 islands, and they've got to have a base. So you've got to put them up as well. And that out of 50 million, you know, for a 4-year cycle, I'm not exactly sure the exact number, but I do remember that number being mentioned compared to 450.
If I put you in charge of world cricket for a day, what's the first thing you'd do? Stuart Law's on the door at the ICC. What would you do?
I'd make it an even playing field, to be honest.
That goes back to your previous answer, really, isn't it?
Yeah, the distribution of funds to make sure that cricket is a – we're trying to say it's a game for all, and we're trying to make it the global game. And I think to do that, we need to, understand that things need to be put in place for countries to be able to put teams out on the field. So a distribution of funds, not equal, but, let's up a few of the lesser nations to give them a bit of a leg up.
My name is Jacob, and I sent the Badger a message, and now I'm on the podcast with this jingle. If you would like to get in touch with the Cricket Badger podcast, then tweet at @cricket_badger.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
If you were starting your career again today as a youngster, is there anything you'd tell yourself, anything you'd do differently, anything that you'd give that young Stuart Law, that advice you'd give him knowing what was around the corner?
Yeah, head down and score your runs. That's basically it. The rest will follow. Don't go chasing. It's difficult this day and age because it's all about chasing the money, and there's plenty of money out there to be had. But I still think those that pursue the international, want to play for your country in all formats, you'll be looked after better than the most. So head down, bum up, score your runs.
Would the 12-year-old Stuart Law be very happy with what you achieved in your career?
Not at all. I wanted to play for Australia for a long time. I remember my school teachers telling me I'd never do it. It's a stupid thing to want. And to only have played one test. I would have loved to have played, even 20 test matches. I set out, I would love to have played 100 and become, one of the best players that, Australia had. So unfortunately it wasn't to be, but, as a 12-year-old, no, I'd look back and go, no, I've done nothing.
Wow. You're harsh.
But fair.
Right, we're on to the more frivolous questions now. You can answer these with one word if you want to. They say rock stars want to be sportsmen and vice versa. If you could have been famous doing something else, what would you have liked to have done?
Lead guitar,
the rock band or something?
Yeah, either. No, I'd probably be more like a drummer, I reckon.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
If you could meet anybody, living or dead, somebody, some hero out there, who would you quite like to have met that you haven't met?
Mate, one of my sporting idols growing up was Andre Agassi. I just loved the way he went. He's the story of him as a young kid going through that tennis, regime as a youngster was, nearly turned him away from sport. And he turned it around to become one of the greatest of all time. So yeah, Andre Agassi.
They're going to make The Lawman, the film about your life. Who would play you?
Well, I have been, and I don't know, I've not really know too much about the bloke, but I have been mistaken for Max Beasley a few times. Not recently, but in my younger days, yeah. So I think he'd be top of the list. My wife seemed to like him a bit, so that's okay.
Well, I've got a suggestion. I'll just put him on the screen. Mark Wahlberg. Similarities there, isn't there?
Oh, I'll take that. I'll take Marky Mark. Yeah, no problem.
What's the last time you can remember feeling really nervous? Were you a nervy player? Were you somebody that ready to go out there? You got all cold sweat, or did you take things in your stride?
Towards the end of my career, not nervous so much because you knew exactly what you were doing. At times you're a bit more apprehensive, but never nervous. As we say back home, not shaking like a shitting dog. Haven't been that nervous, but I think nerves are good, though. You've got to understand what nerves do, and if you can turn it around and make them work for you, it can be real powerful. So I can't remember the last time, but there would have been a time recently, even in a coaching career, where you sit back and you are nervous. Your palms are sweaty. You're waiting for your team to go out and hopefully follow through with the plan that you come up with.
What is the top item on your bucket list, things to do before you die?
Well, you know, people say parachuting. I don't know, no enjoyment, nothing to do. No, I don't want to do that. I have a fascination, and my wife and I have got a fascination with sharks. Growing up in Australia, you know, I've had a few swim under a surfboard, and you know, that's a bit frightening. But I'd like to go to South Africa or a place in Australia called Port Augusta, where you can go and cage dive with the great whites.
I'll let you do that on your own. I don't want to come on that one.
I'm not sure I want to do it, but I'll have a go.
Yeah. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 is the Fonz, 1 is me. How cool are you?
Well, 35 years ago, I thought I was really cool. I thought I was out of 12, but now I'm about mid-road, mate. I'll go 5 or 6.
If you had access to a time machine, you can take it forwards or backwards in the world. Where would you take it? What part of history or the future would you like to see?
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a good call. Good question. I think I'd like to go and see the future and what it holds for, you know, is all this, you know, move towards renewable energies, is it going to be sustainable and achievable, to be honest? You know, that's one thing I'd like to get hold of. We're getting told a lot of information. And some people are saying it's a load of rubbish. Other people are saying, no, it's the only way that the world's going to survive. So I'd like to go forward and see if that is the case.
Good answer. Good answer. You've been all over the place. Obviously, if you could have a second home anywhere in the world, where would you put it?
It'd be near a golf course. I love Thailand. So anywhere in the country of Thailand, particularly around the beach areas, so Phuket, Hua Hin, around there, I'd absolutely love to see my days out there playing golf and just lying on the beach.
Sounds all right. And avoiding the sharks.
No sharks there, mate, apparently.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
If you could change one thing about yourself, what would you change?
Other people's perception of me. They see me as the player that I was, you know, 20 years ago. And, you know, people don't realize how much I've changed in time. And I think the greatest thing that happened to me was the birth of my son, who's now 21. You do learn to calm down and cool it a bit. But yeah, other people's perception, it's been a bit tough at times. When you hear about people who don't even know you saying what type of person you are, and you think, well, mate, how do you know? You know, and that's the thing that irks me a bit. But well, that's life, I suppose.
You think you've got that image of being like a hothead from when you were younger that people still see you as that?
Hothead, I've been called recently. I've been called, you know, hard. I'm not hard. I'm honest. I don't think honesty is a bad thing to be. Yeah. Honesty is only as bad as what you – a lot of people don't like hearing the truth. Probably the way I deliver it at times is very harsh, but sometimes there's no easy way to tell someone the truth, you know, and unfortunately for me, I've just got that in me that I'll tell it how it is, but it doesn't make me a bad person. And that's the perception I want to change. You know, there's a lot of things that have been said about me in Australia as well, and usually said without my knowledge or usually said without me having an ability to talk back about it. So there's always two sides to every story. And, you know, I'm sure that, some people understand who I am, and that's okay. You know, I've got my circle of friends, and that's all I need. But some other people who, you know, you probably think they might be influential in your future career, don't really know the real Stuart Law.
What will you be doing in 10 years' time?
Hopefully, living on a golf course in Thailand, playing golf, and sipping cold drinks on the beach. That'd be nice. But mate, no, I'd like to still be involved in cricket in some capacity, whether it might not be involved in direct contact with players. It might be in other capacities, you know, to commentate. There's so many different games and competitions these days, you know, and to just have a different voice in the commentary box would be, I think, be refreshing as well. But stay involved in cricket. I'm a cricket tragic. I'm like you. I love cricket. Absolutely love it. Always have, always will. I'll always stand up for it. You know, test match cricket is my favourite. I'll always stand up for test match cricket. I love watching the T20s. I love watching the 50-over game. I think cricket's the winner.
Right. You haven't frozen. Right. We're okay for now, I think. Because this is the last question, Stuart. So we've finally got there, I think.
So perseverance gets us through.
Hopefully the connection stays for this one last question. If you'd been me today and you'd been interviewing yourself, is there anything you'd have asked that I haven't asked to get a tremendous answer?
Oh, favourite off-field activity, maybe. I always tried to make sure that I was having fun. And, you know, you hear people now, you've got to think about, you know, your cricket or think about your job 24/7. You can't let it go. If you want to be the best, you've got to do it. If I did that, I would have been mentally fried by 26. So always, when I finished, you know, whether it be a day's play or a match, always got away from the game as much as I possibly could, just to refresh the mind, reset, whether it's go out and just relax and have a few drinks and whatever. So I would have asked, you know, what did you do away from cricket to keep your mind, you know, level, and what was your favourite off-field activity? I would say having a beer with mates.
And sounds like a round of golf as well these days.
Yeah, round of golf. My wife plays off 13, so I've got to be good enough to have a round with her. So I've got to lift my game a bit.
What's your handicap at the minute?
Mine, I don't have one. I'm not a member of a club. You probably find this hard to believe. I didn't like the snooty attitude of the golf clubs, and you know, you got to wear this type of, you know, long socks and all the rest of it. I thought that's not for me. But now they're a bit more relaxed. I'm starting to come back. So who knows? In future, I might have one. Might have one for you.
Were you the coach of West Indies when Shannon Gabriel did that shot? Got out.
Yes, I was.
I remember the camera just panning around to you. I thought it was you. What was going through your head in that moment? Because that was slightly frustrating, I'd imagine.
Well, it was, but also you've got to put it in context. He's a number 11 batsman. He shouldn't be in that position. You know, the batsman should have been doing the job. And I remember 10 minutes afterward, he came up to me after the game finished. He came up to me and said, "Coach, I need time off. I need to get away from this." I went, "Whoa, come here." And I spoke to him about what was your thought process? And he said, "Well, all the fielders came in. If I defended and got out, I'd look a fool. If I had a swing and I got half a bat on it, it's going to clear everybody and I'd be safe." So he only had to face one ball. And unfortunately, the inside edged onto the stumps. But I said to him, "Mate, the thought process is 100% right." You know, because he couldn't trust his defence. So to have a swing, and he's a big, strong man.
I see.
If he got half a bat on, he was going for six, you know. So the thought process is right. And I just said, "Mate, bad." Just the execution wasn't quite there. And, you know, people still laugh at me, you know, "Oh, yeah, what was he doing? What was he doing?" You know, people have laughed at me about it and what have you. But Shango, I'll stick up for him. His thought process was right. And number two, he shouldn't have been in that position. The batsman should have been doing the job.
It's an amazing moment, though. It's fantastic.
Mate, it was.
Fantastic moment.
To draw the series.
Yeah.
To draw the series as well. And, it would have given us a real lift. But, that's the beauty of cricket.
Stuart Law, thank you very much today. I've had a load of messages coming in whilst you've been on, thanking you for keep connecting. And I'd like to thank you as well for keeping connecting, because it's been a frustrating line that we've had. But we've got there in the end. You've answered the 20 questions. We got to number 20. I wish you all the best for the future. Enjoy the UAE. Enjoy your coaching with Bangladesh under 19s. And thank you very much indeed for being a guest on the Cricket Badger podcast today.
No, James, thanks for having me. And big shout out to everybody listening. Thanks for tuning in.
All the best, everybody, then. Thank you very much for watching. I'll edit this down. We won't have the little interruptions when I put this out as an audio podcast later. So anybody that listens to this will have no idea that we've had all the frustrations that we've had. But thanks again to Stuart. Thanks again to everybody for watching. And we'll see you again very soon indeed.
Sports Social Podcast Network. Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.